So now I'd like to introduce to you Tomás Ryan. So Tomás is Associate Professor in the School of Biochemistry and Immunology and Principal Investigator at the Trinity College Institute of Neuroscience. Tomás, you're most welcome to Near FM this morning. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your work. It's on the mechanisms of memory storage and recall. What does that mean?
Well, my research group focuses on broadly the question of how information is stored in the brain. We're particularly interested in the interaction of memories, the information components that we seem to acquire through learning in our lifetime with our instincts. So the innate knowledge that we have about our environment as animals. And of course, instinct evolved over many millions of years in lineages leading to mammals. But we study information in the context of model organisms such as fruit flies. So the work of my research group focuses on how information is stored in the brain. We're particularly interested in how long-term memory is represented in neuronal ensembles. By that we mean collections of brain cells that seem to store particular representations. But we're also interested in innate information, in instinct. This is the information about the environment that we're born with and that animals are born with. So knowledge about the world that comes from our evolutionary history. And we're really interested in understanding how our instincts interact with our memories in the context of behavior, in the context of how a behaving animal adapts to its environment.
Fascinating stuff. And also in studio, we have Jane Ullmeyer. So Jane, you're most welcome to Near FM. We're talking about Brain Awareness Week and all the work that Tomás has been doing in the Ryan Lab about encoding memory storage and recall. So Jane, you've done lots of work in Trinity. You've worked across many, my goodness, history and humanities and the Long Room Hub and global awareness. What work have you done with Tomás over the last couple of years in Trinity?
So firstly, Tomás is just an absolutely phenomenal scholar, but also great colleague. And I first met him when I was the founding vice president for global relations, and he was at MIT and he was looking after the alumni in Boston. Wouldn't that be fair, Tomás? You were the coordinator of it. And he was somebody who just made everything happen. So on a number of occasions, I was in Boston for events and used the opportunity to reach out to Trinity alumni, and then got to know Tomás a little bit then, and was absolutely delighted. Next thing I knew, he had come home from Boston to Trinity. And then we worked together in the context of two initiatives, really. One is a program, a fantastic undergraduate degree program that we have with Columbia University. It's one of these sort of 2+2 degrees where the students do their first 2 years here in Dublin at Trinity and the second 2 years in New York. And Tomás has been he's done phenomenal work in terms of expanding that from the arts and humanities into neuroscience. So it's been lovely to collaborate with him there, sort of in the education space. But I suppose where we've done most work is in the research space, because I'm a great believer in interdisciplinarity. I really believe that the magic happens where the disciplines collide. And Tomás is extraordinarily open in the way that he thinks. He's got a secret growth for philosophy. And I remember we had a lovely conversation around the time of the big Schrödinger conference. And then more recently, we've been working with TCIN, the Trinity Center for Neuroscience, around what we call neurohumanities. And so I would be coming again as the humanist and Tomás coming at it from the neuroscience end, but with somebody who has a very deep understanding and appreciation of what the humanities actually mean. So he's the perfect sort of colleague to have, because we can collaborate at so many different levels. And the final thing I would say about Tomás is, in terms of the current pandemic, he's been extraordinarily articulate and extremely brave in the way that he has communicated with such clarity and such honesty about the challenges that we as a society are facing at the moment. And I take my hat off to colleagues, and Tomás is one of a number in Trinity who have really just stepped up to the plate and have done a huge amount to demonstrate to the wider public, as well as to government, the importance of investing in talent at one level, but also of basic frontier research, because a lot of the discoveries, especially around vaccines, you know, obviously are coming on the foot of decades of investment. moment in basic frontier research. So I see him as a huge ally as we advocate, if you want, for additional funding for basic frontier research across all disciplines. And I chair the Irish Research Council, which is the body in Ireland that funds this. So I think, Tomás, you have some IRC funding. I know you've attracted funding from many different agencies. But having colleagues like Tomás is such a blessing. And I think Trinity's very lucky because, you know, it attracts amazing people. And it's up to us then, Karen, to make sure that they're happy in Trinity. They want to stay in Trinity. So we need to always ensure that we're supporting them, we're promoting them, we're valuing them and making sure that they're happy.
And you want to make sure as well that you attract people who are at early career. So I have somebody else in studio with us, Javesh Ramdani. Javesh, thank you for joining us as well. You're pursuing a PhD in Imaging Mind Architecture and you're the lead of the Reproducibility Dublin Journal Club. Tell us a little bit about that.
Hi. I'm pursuing a PhD in Trinity. I'm actually working with Dr. Claire Kelly and I'm based at the Trinity College Institute of Neuroscience. It's been 2 years since I've been to Trinity and, you know, with COVID, unfortunately, I've been working from home, so home being Mauritius. But, you know, I think the support that I was given so far was incredible. And also, you know, part of the work that I do is about reproducible science. So I try to basically promote our work in a reproducible and open access way. And we also established a journal club with my supervisor. And we try to meet every 2 weeks to talk about papers addressing the reproducibility crisis in research, as you may have heard about it. And, you know, despite COVID, the progress has still been strong. So I'm pretty happy with my 2 years in Trinity.
Okay. And the difference between being in college in Mauritius and college in Trinity, explain a little bit about that.
Well, I think it's very difficult to compare because I come from a less developed country and Ireland is, you know, is different. So for me, home is Mauritius. You know, I've been here since the first lockdown, which was in March, and I've been working since then. So I've been able to meet my supervisor every single week, you know, which with the time difference is actually quite good. And also, like, I've been working closely with the IT department, you know, because of my analysis, I need Trinity's server. But working from Mauritius is okay. I usually just stay indoor of all these restrictions. So I'm lucky to say that, you know, my work has not been affected directly because I don't usually recruit my participants because I work with big data sets. So that has been the plus side for me.
Yeah, I've heard it said, Jane, in fact, it was in your manifesto that one of the little silver linings out of the pandemic was more access to tutors, more access to colleagues on Zoom. And I know there is an argument that just because you can be on Zoom all day, every day, doesn't mean you have to be. But I think there is an argument for people like Javesh, who is studying and working from Mauritius, that even allowing for time zones, and I know, Tomás, you worked in America as well at one stage, I think this availability that we can all meet each other on Zoom has been a huge boost for many students.
I can speak to that, but Tomás might like to as well. Do you know, I think it's a mixed blessing, Karen, in that obviously we can do it and people have become very comfortable, very proficient in working with technology. But I'm sure, Javesh, you would love to have some face-to-face time, not just if you want with your academic colleagues, but with your peer group, because I think the friendships are harder to make in Dublin from Mauritius or from, I've spent some of the lockdown in Donegal. You know, you really miss the collegiality. I'm giving a set of lectures at the moment, Karen, called the Ford Lectures, and they're the big history lectures in my field. And normally I would be doing this at 5 o'clock in a very formal way in Oxford, and I would have a fellowship at All Souls. Now, I am giving the Ford Lectures. I've been filming them all day, or the final two. There are six of them. And it's fine to film them, but you're in an empty room with no audience, no interaction, no feedback. And it is very, very different. Now, the plus side is that instead of a couple of hundred people coming into a lecture theatre in Oxford now, probably thousands of people will get to listen to the Ford Lectures. And I think RTE is going to put them on their website, which will, of course, will allow the audiences to be even bigger. And so that's a plus. But what are we missing? We're missing the debate, the discussion, the interaction that happens. And I think that's the problem. Everybody scrambled and making the best of a bad situation, but it's still not not the same. And I think the students, and I think that's true of the early career researchers as well, that they are missing something special. And the truth is that relationships can be sustained during COVID-19. Making new relationships is, I mean, existing ones can be sustained. Making new ones is a big challenge. That would be just my take on it. I don't know if Tomás wants to agree there or disagree.
I think I completely agree with Jane. She just made a key point about initiating new social interactions. I have found to be very, very difficult in this type of medium, maintaining social interactions, maintaining scientific collaborations with peers in other countries is doable. We've learned a lot about what we can do in this format. It has made certain things more efficient. I think when we return to what we would call some kind of normality, I think some things will stay. I don't think we'll be flying across oceans to attend review meetings or to attend the more bureaucratic aspects of academia. And I think that's positive. But I think that real scientific conferences and real scientific interactions, not just science, but all of academia, needs to happen in person. And I think particularly for teaching, I really cannot push an optimistic angle on what the current situation is doing to university teaching. And that's why I think, you know, we need to be finding ways to mitigate against this. But while certain aspects of the current situation do make research and academic administration more progressive in some ways, I think for teaching, there really is no substitute. Some may find this view to be conservative. There's no substitute for the interaction between the student and the lecturer. And I greatly enjoy lecturing. One of the main privileges of being a scientist in Ireland is that I get to lecture Trinity undergraduates. And that's really important for me, because I know that 10 to 15% of my students are going to end up as being scientists broadly, whether that's scientists in academia or scientists in industry. The other 85% are not going to be scientists, but they are going to be Trinity graduates. And they're going to be Trinity graduates in Ireland, and they're going to be Trinity graduates out in the world. And being able to be in the position where I get to introduce them to different ideas, to different concepts, and to different things that we know about neuroscience, and now the interaction between neuroscience and the humanities, that is a rare privilege, because they're going to be taking that with them going forward. And I still remember the best lectures that I had when I was an undergraduate. The ideas that we were introduced to were things that we worked with. I remember one professor that I had when I was an undergraduate student in genetics who said, "Your lectures at Trinity are not here to teach you. Your job is to learn on your own. Your lectures are here to introduce you to the things that may help you to learn." And so being in that position is really a wonderful privilege in Trinity and in Ireland. But it's very difficult to do that online. Present my view, but I cannot form that kind of connection with students that we were able to do before the pandemic. So I think that we do need to mitigate for that in the medium term for those students who come through that process. But we also need to, I think, make bigger asks of the engineers who are responsible for producing the kind of technology that we're using. I mean, Zoom is wonderful, but I do sometimes feel that we're capable of better kinds of communication apparatus that don't yet exist for going to be doing online learning in the long term.
Well, I suppose what'll happen when we're all vaccinated and when we can get back to a somewhat level of normality in Trinity, there might be mixed learning, so that there will be some lectures in the lecture hall as you'd like, and then some on Zoom as well. And then with this mixed learning ability, Tomás, Jane, what do you miss most about real life in Trinity, day-to-day life? Is it the hustle and bustle of listening to students and the people walking around with coffees and just normal life and people engaging and friends and laughing? And what do you miss the most?
You know, it is that very sort of simple interaction, isn't it? And the spontaneity. I'm very fond of the security men in the arts building, and they always have a little bit of crack for you as you're coming through the gate, the door. And, you know, the banter and the goodwill, you just can't replicate that. But I was very lucky, Karen. I was the director of the Trinity Longroom Hub, which is our research institute in the arts and humanities. And it's one of these wonderful beacons celebrating the excellence of the arts and humanities at Trinity, but also bringing in people from around Ireland, from around the world. So it was always a bustle of activity. And we had a weekly coffee morning.
And you still do. I've joined Minnie's coffee morning on Wednesday at 11, and it still feels very real.
Do you know, I'm glad to hear you say that, because it is, but it's not. And I'm looking forward to the day when we actually meet in person for those coffee mornings, because they're so magical, even online. But yeah. Oh my God. So I've just finished a big lecture. You know what I was just doing now? We were all sitting having a glass of wine, having a, you know, a greasy cocktail sausage.
Isn't it the small things that we miss?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Jane. And Tomás, I'd love you, if you wouldn't mind, can you say a little bit about neurohumanities? I'd love to learn more about that.
The neurohumanities program has been a new enterprise at Trinity College Dublin in the last few years. And it's really been led by, I would say, both Jane Allmire and also Mani Ramaswamy, who's the director of neuroscience at Trinity. And now Trinity is really, it's an unusual university by any standard, because it really encourages people to use their time and energy on unusual and interdisciplinary projects. And putting together neuroscience with the humanities is one of those. And I think it's been fantastically productive from an intellectual level. I think it's already seeding new scientific projects. And I think it is laying the foundation for what I think could be very important developments in how we understand the brain. So neuroscience is the science of the brain. It's the science of how we understand how the brain produces mind. And although neuroscientists tend to be, I think, very good at public communication of science, it often hides an uncomfortable feature of neuroscience, which is that we really don't understand what we're doing. We really don't understand how the brain works at a system. We understand how brain cells work very much from physiologists. We understand what the brain does from psychologists. We understand what the brain is made of because of biochemists. We understand something about how the brain is built from geneticists. But how the brain actually works as an organ to create mind is a very different question. In a sense, neuroscience is not a discipline. Neuroscience happens when those disciplines come together. But those scientific disciplines on their own have not been able to, in 30 years of where neuroscience was a word or an idea, have not been able to produce an idea for how we can make sense of how the brain might produce mind. And there's a problem here. It's a cultural problem, which I think we're quite familiar with in this country, but I think in most of the Western world, people don't really want to accept the idea that the brain is just an organ. Nobody, even scientists, even brain scientists, don't really want to accept that the brain itself is an organ like the heart or the kidneys or the stomach. They want to think that there's something special about how the brain works. And there is something special about how the brain works, just like there's something special about our genes. Our genes are not regular molecules, they're special molecules. And our brain is not a normal organ, it's a special organ. It allows us to be who we are. But that doesn't mean there's anything magical about it. And it doesn't mean there's anything vitalistic about it. What it means is that at some point in our evolution, an arrangement of cells created a structure that was meaningful for the environment. What genetics is, the difference between a gene and a random chunk of DNA is that a gene carries information. Okay. Information is key. The difference between a coronavirus and another random strand of messenger RNA is not the chemical, and it's not anything magical. It's the arrangement of the chemical that creates a virus that has a valence for infecting other biological organisms. Something similar must have happened when we evolved the brain, in that we went from being purely physical to having an arrangement of cells in this organ that carried information about the world that we evolved in. It's nothing magical, but it's also not necessarily biological. What it is information. And the only way we can understand this is to accept that it was completely arbitrary. It's something that happened in our evolution that could have happened another way, but it happened to happen this way. And it's not really so much about physical laws as it is about history. Okay. History means that happened, that could have happened another way, that may have happened for very arbitrary reasons at that point in our evolutionary lineage, but became very important, became essential because it was those informational structures that we built the next thing and the next thing and the next thing on. In many senses, that's what genetics is. And I also think that's what neuroscience is. But we need a way of thinking about this. We need a way of understanding how information in the brain doesn't just exist in the brain, but exists with how the brain interacts with the world.
Okay, well, that's perfect, because we have somebody in studio with us who just might be able to address some of that. Brian Lawler, you are in the GBHI. You're Deputy Executive Director of the Global Brain Health Institute. Now, the GBHI is an international leadership training program, and that is the aim of improving brain health and reducing the scale and impact of dementia worldwide. And it's across 40 nations. So maybe, Brian, you might be able to give us some information about the brain and global brain health and all of the stuff that Tomás was talking about there a few minutes ago, all the different disciplines of the brain. What's your take on it?
Well, I think the interaction between arts, humanities and neuroscience is really, really important. And this is really the sweet spot for GBHI. Mm. What we're trying to do is change a narrative around dementia, and we don't believe that taking a purely biomedical approach is the way to go. So what GBHI is about is bringing together interprofessionals, people from all sorts of disciplines, not just the sciences and medicine, but also from arts, humanities, from architecture, engineering, journalists, with artists, with writers, because we believe we have to train these interprofessional leaders in order to be able to change the landscape to tackle this wicked problem of dementia. It can't just be a single approach, taking a biomedical approach. So for example, we've worked very closely with people like Jane Olmeyer at the Long Room Hub, and working with a theater group, Lynn Parker and Rough Magic. So we got involved in a very interesting project with Lynn Parker and Rough Magic. And Lynn came to us and said they were interested in the whole concept of choir and how choral singing could improve well-being and affect the brain. So they came to GBHI, and our fellows are really interested in working with them and helping them understand about the effects of music on the brain. So we had a very interesting interaction and collaboration, which we hope will lead to a theatre piece around this. And we think this theatre piece and storytelling is really so important in terms of how we might change the very negative stories around dementia and Alzheimer's disease, the tragedy narrative. So working with arts, humanities, with theater groups, with artists, and with the type of storytelling changing from despair to hope, we believe that this is so important. It's not just about the science, it's how we tell the stories about the science and how we communicate it with the public. So this interaction with the Long Room Hub, from GBHI's perspective, is hugely, hugely important. We value so much the interdisciplinarity, the interprofessionalism. I think they learn from us, as Rough Magic would attest to, but also we learn so much from them.
And that's exactly it about the brain, isn't it? And Tomás, what you were saying about that the brain isn't just one thing. The brain is such an interesting part of ourselves to study, because it's telling the story of ourselves. We can talk about the cells, we can talk about the research, we can talk about poetry, we can talk about being in a choir or putting that choir on the stage. But it's all about finding the story. And Jane, I did a bit of research before our programme today, and everybody who seems to talk about you says you're a natural communicator. You seem to just span all the different disciplines in Trinity. Tell me about being a connector. Is that something that you always were interested in, just finding the thread, finding the story and bringing all these people together? Is that just something that comes naturally to you?
What a very nice compliment, because actually that I can't tell you how much that means to hear that. So for me, I'm just curious. And so I'm always willing to take a risk. And I remember Manny coming about the neurohumanities program. And the truth is, I don't really understand what it is that Manny does. And I think probably Manny doesn't really understand what I do, but we've got phenomenal respect for each other. And if Manny says that this is worth doing, I'll be right. I trust you, Manny. If it's worth doing, let's make it happen. So that's how I cope about many things. I know, and it's the same with, obviously, I know and adore Brian and Ian Robertson, and I've known them for many, many years. I know that if they're going to say, this is something I'd like to try, I'll be absolutely. And I know that by doing it together, we'll be able to push the boundary a little bit further, and that there'll be such an opportunity for us all to learn, because I think that's the other thing. I'm constantly engaged learning. Just, this is a fascinating conversation, Karen. I was loving listening to what Tomás was saying, but even going back to the collaboration we had around the choir, that was a bit serendipitous because I've known Lynn Parker, who is this amazing director of this theatre group, Rough Magic. Her archive is in Trinity. And as director of the Hub, I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to have a theatre group be in residence? And then, of course, it made sense to collaborate with GBHI. But we began this journey not having a clue quite what was going to transpire. And that's what creates the great energy. But you have to trust, you have to have faith, and you have to want to be curious about everything. But I know that it's worth the investment of time and effort. At the very least, you get some amazing friendships out of it. But I actually think it's an opportunity to move the dial in terms of new research. And I just want to make one more general point about collaborating across disciplines, because the truth is, it's hard to do. It takes time. You have to build trust. You're pushed out of your comfort zones. And academics hate that because they always want to be the ones who know everything in the room. And you have to be willing to expose that level of ignorance as well. And I feel that it's actually, Trinity is, I'm almost going to say, uniquely placed in an Irish context. Well, it is uniquely placed in an Irish context, but it's actually very unusual. I've got another amazing collaborative project called Human Plus, which is all about putting the human experience at the center of technological innovation. We work there in partnership with enterprise, particularly with Accenture. The only other university Accenture works with in this space is actually MIT. But that's immediately telling me something about what we've got in Trinity in terms of these very, very high levels of collaboration in the neurosciences. Obviously, that was with computer scientists and engineers. Is not the norm. And that's our secret sauce in Trinity. And it's something that, obviously, as you're aware, I'm running for provost, that I actually think I'd love to see grow and develop. And some of the barriers that Tomás alluded to earlier, we need to get rid of. And we need to really foster, facilitate these sorts of opportunities. Because just at the moment, they're happening around the edges in things like GBHI or the Trinity Long Room Hub or TCAN, our Centre for Neuroscience. If we could actually elevate this and let it actually spread across the university, I think it would really distinguish us as an institution, not just on the European stage, but on the world stage. And that's another reason I'm just so excited about these sorts of conversations and these sorts of collaborations.
Well, that's exactly it. It's putting Trinity on the map, just not on the map in Dublin or in Ireland, but in the world, on the world stage. GBHI has two universities involved, only one in Europe, and that's in Trinity College. And the other one is UCSF in San Francisco in America. And what I love what you said there, Jane, about just the ability to trust, to let the people who know what they're talking about get on with it and just trust them enough to know that they know what they're doing. And just you go away and do the work that you're doing and I'll listen to what you say. Fantastic. And that brings back in the whole thing of having global health, that we can learn from each other around the world. So this whole last year, I think if you were to ask anybody anywhere, they would say they miss their friends, they miss hugs, they miss those simple things, just cups of coffees and chats. Please God, we'll soon get to do all of that in real life again. It's been such a pleasure chatting to you all today about brain awareness. And I love the whole thing that it's about brain health, looking after our brains, looking after our bodies, and most of all, looking after ourselves. Thank you so much for joining us. That was such a pleasure.